feels like the system is broken, and that the only way the system is going to get fixed is if we break it entirely and rebuild it.
Welcome to the WorkManus podcast. This is Thomas Bertels. Talent acquisition is one of the most important processes in any organization. It determines who gets in, what capabilities the company builds, and whether the organization can actually execute its strategy. In this episode of Work Matters, Gabriella Salvatori and I explore why talent acquisition feels so broken and what to do about it. AI is changing the process on both sides. Candidates are using it to tailor resumes at scale, while employers are using it to screen and filter resumes at scale. The result is often more volume, more noise, more frustration, and not necessarily better hiring decisions. Gabriella brings a deeply human perspective to HR and leadership, and in our conversation, we explore what it would take to rebuild talent acquisition into a more strategic, more intentional, and more human process. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you do, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Gabriella, welcome to the Work Matters podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Delighted to have you on. In your work, you focus on the human side of business, helping leaders tap into the power of their people. We want to explore today in our conversation this idea that we seem to be headed towards the direction of dehumanizing work. So the first question I have for you is, there's a lot of talk about AI improving productivity, and you're working with a lot of HR leaders. From your vantage point, what is the impact of AI on the HR function?
I think that there are a couple of ways to think about this. The first is HR is able to improve productivity through the use of AI, and it's coming with a trade-off. And that trade-off is the personal or human touch. So if you take, for example, the sub-discipline of talent acquisition as an example, what we see happening in talent acquisition with the rise of AI is that there is a round peg, round hole problem, that the applicant tracking systems are looking for words that are exactly mirrored from the job description. They're not looking for people who have an imagination or who have a diverse background or who come from a somewhat non-traditional legacy from a work perspective. They're really looking for, are they matching and meeting the requirements of this role as we have written it? So there's a way where that's increasing productivity because we're seeing 2,200 applicants, 1,200 applicants, 900 applicants for any given role. So you could say, well, that's better because there's more choice, but really that's overwhelming. And our talent acquisition colleagues are not able to keep up with that amount of flow. And so they set the criteria for the applicant tracking system to be quite narrow. And in that way are missing out on really positive talent and really good conversations they could be having to present a diverse and robust slate to their professionals.
A compounding problem is also that the applicants now feed their resumes through AI to match that job description. So you end up with a lot more resumes that on paper match the qualifications, but in reality might not.
Might not, and also don't necessarily demonstrate the quality of the candidate. It's a rigged game. We all understand how the game works. It's match word for word. And so we're all playing that game, and it's driving up what looks to be like efficiency in process, but inefficiency in quality.
You get more people through the system, but the ability to pick out the right candidates goes down, so you get a lot more false positives. In that case, AI is not going to do that much to really help the HR function become more capable. It just shifts the emphasis a little bit.
The ways that HR can use AI is from a thought partnership perspective. So I know for myself, you know, I've put into Claude or ChatGPT, teach me everything I need to know about employment law in the UK. And I've gotten back really good information, information that would have taken me hours to find. So as a research tool, it's incredibly helpful. I know I've put in working in the healthcare environment, teach me everything I need to know about a high reliability organization and how it relates to employee experience and what I should know about that. That's helpful research. So I do think that there's a place for AI in its encyclopedic knowledge to help us narrow in on things that we wouldn't necessarily have access to otherwise. It does not replace judgment. It does not replace interpersonal connection. It does not replace sounding boards and the ability for me to say, Thomas, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? It doesn't replace that. It augments potentially my ability to get data, to get information.
It can help in some aspects, but it actually makes it worse in others. I guess one of the casualties is probably the candidate experience. People complain about ghosting. They complain about the black box that their resume goes in and no information comes out. Is that something that, from an HR leadership perspective, people see as problems? And if so, are they doing anything about it?
So the most senior executive recruiters that I've spent time with have said, I feel terrible. I have 2,200 resumes. I absolutely positively cannot get through all of them. I know I'm missing gems, and there's nothing I can do because I'm overwhelmed by the volume. So I think that it really does create an environment that is anonymous as opposed to personal, in an environment that is blinded to the depth of quality. And I know from a candidate perspective, as you said, high levels of frustration, never hearing back, what's happened to our boundaries in terms of the politeness of talent acquisition, in terms of the reciprocity in the process. Why can't we just sit down and have a conversation? Why is it that everything has to be behavioral interviewing? Tell me about a time when. It's because recruiters are trying to weed out and weed through this high volume. And so they're limited in their ability to actually converse. And it feels like the system is broken, and that the only way the system is going to get fixed is if we break it entirely and rebuild it.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit more. I guess one of the problems that I see is that you can't put the toothpaste back into the tube. So certainly the technology is going to be here to stay. It's going to evolve further. There's enormous pressure on HR functions and everybody to become more productive. People are laying off oodles of people to free up the funding that they need to fully embrace AI. So it doesn't seem that we're going to stop that train. So in that context, what can we do to make, for example, talent acquisition work again?
A great question, Thomas. And if I knew the exact answer to this, you and I would be gabillionaires. But I would say one is to acknowledge that the system has changed. And two is to really think about how do we diversify our job descriptions? How do we think beyond the job description to org design first? And what are we really trying to accomplish with this role? And reverse engineer from there to a job description that is not cookie cutter, that is specific to the business needs that we are trying to fill. If you take a survey of job descriptions out there in the HR space or any functional domain, there's not a lot of difference from one to the other. You reread the same words over and over again. Why? Because they're using AI to generate the job description. So there really needs to be an infusion of creation and co-creation and strategic thinking back into the system, where we start with, What is the business problem this job is trying to solve? And how do we address it? And what are the specific skills, knowledge, capabilities, abilities required in order to answer that call for the business? And so we really want to go all the way back to the beginning of strategic intent of the organization, as opposed to a transactional hiring process.
If I hear you right, so one of the challenges is that all these job descriptions are generic, they're AI generated, they're like a long list of oftentimes criteria and qualifications that actually are in like direct competition or conflict with each other. So it's just a laundry list of things, which makes it obviously very difficult to screen resumes against that. Hence, we have to rely on AI to do that. But it would strike me as that to solve that, it's a very different type of engaging with the organization. It's not really something that I've seen a lot of HR functions do in a masterful manner. As you know, I'm a big proponent of work design, job design, setting up people with roles that actually bring out the best in them. But I don't see a lot of appetite for that, and I don't see a lot of ability. You work with HR business partners. How would you rate people's ability to really be a strategic talent partner who helps shape these jobs?
So you've hit on a hot button for me, Thomas, because I have an allergic reaction to the HR function, which says, I want a seat at the table. That is HR of 25 years ago. HR has to be a strategic partner to its managers and its leaders. So we're not going to change this system unless leaders and managers get involved and start to translate to HR that business need we were talking about. And that has to happen through a conversation. It has to happen through a dialogue about what are we trying to accomplish on this team with this role in this organization, given the level of maturity of our company. What are we trying to accomplish? So I do think it comes back to HR, you know, thinking of themselves as a strategy partner, not as a business partner. How are you helping to execute the strategy of the organization?
I like that, but I think that's also probably quite difficult and very ambitious, because I don't think that a lot of HR business partners are set up for that, both from a capability perspective, but also from the appreciation of the managers to serve in that strategic function. Is that a starting point to upgrade your HR business partners, to turn them into strategic designers of work versus, let's say, order takers?
There's this really old book. It's called The Trusted Advisor. And it was actually written by a man named David Meister. And it was really written about the consulting relationship between provider, partner, and client. I think it applies here. I think that part of the skills we need to improve upon in the HR space has to do with being a trusted advisor, which means not taking an order, saying no, engaging the conversation, asking good questions, and building trust and credibility, not through yes, ma'aming, yes, siring, but rather through inquiry and curiosity and dialogue. And I think that's a piece that we're missing. And part of the challenge of why we're missing it is the pace of business today. Because AI has accelerated productivity and production, there is a pace issue, which is that we are all moving on a 24/7 back-to-back. And I think COVID contributed to this kind of Zoom or Teams culture where we're back-to-back. There's no time to get a drink of water. There's no time to take a breath. There's no time to refresh. And I think there's organizations who are trying to combat that by doing things like making their meetings 55 minutes or 25 minutes as opposed to on the half hour or the hour. That's a good tactical move, but there's a deeper cultural shift that also has to happen where we have to release our people from this grind. If HR, for example, was released from the grind and we were leveraging AI to do the things that were tactical, and HR was freed up to truly be a strategic partner, a thought partner to the business, we would have that ideal of the trusted advisor that David Meister wrote about so long ago.
You're talking about tearing it all down and building it back better. So one starting point would be, right, the HR business partner as a strategic talent advisor who really helps shape something that actually is specific that we can now screen against. What other changes would you put in place to get to a better future state?
One thing that I recently read about is a concept that came out a while ago, which was about we are no longer in a VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. We're now in a BANI world, brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. And I think one of the things that we have to do is address that. The folks who came up with this idea, Jaime Casico, also came up with the post-positive BANI spin, which was bendable as opposed to brittle, attentive as opposed to anxious, neuroflexible as opposed to nonlinear, and interconnected as opposed to incomprehensible. And I think there's something here for us to learn. How are we introducing flexibility into the system? How are we paying attention to that which really matters? How are we thinking about the interconnection points between our functions, between our individuals, between our candidates and our recruiters, to take us back to the talent acquisition example, which is such a prime example right now because of the way that the market is running. If I was queen for a day, I would say, let's take it down a notch. Let's take it down a notch and let's actually engage with each other. Let's take it down a notch and don't get rid of the technology. Use the technology, but use it more wisely. Use it more broadly. Use it with a more grounded in a sense of diversity as opposed to a sense of narrowing, which is what's happening now because of the volume. And take that opportunity to have imagination. To have imagination that there is a candidate out there who may not get past the ATS, but who has something to offer. And have that conversation.
I love the idea. I just wonder, kind of like looking at the reality of the actual experience from a candidate perspective. I don't want to complain about Workday or any of the other HR tools that are out there, but they all seem pretty awful. It seems that tech stack has something to do with it. It certainly shapes the experience. How do you see that? Do you think that you can create a good candidate experience with the technologies that we have today, or is that something that also has to fundamentally change?
Well, I think it's what you said, the toothpaste is out of the tube. So we're not going to get rid of the technology. The question that you're asking, I believe, is can we adapt the technology to be more humanistic? And I think smarter people than I would know how to do that. My instinct is yes, it's doable. The question is, how do we get that done? A very simple example from a candidate perspective, you're asked in Workday to upload your resume. You upload the resume and then you have to auto-populate all of the fields because it can't actually read the resume. From a candidate experience, it's like, why did I bother uploading my resume? And should I spend time filling out all these fields? So there are things that can be fixed in the systems that would make the candidate experience more positive. Also, on the recruiter side, from a talent acquisition professional perspective, they get all these Workday applications that are gobbledygook, right? Because the resumes haven't read directly in, or LinkedIn profiles haven't read directly in. So that's wasting their time. So in a way, yes, the tech stack needs to change. It needs to be more attentive. It needs to be more careful. It needs to be more representative of the input. You know, bad data in, bad data out. Well, here you have a lot of good data going in, getting translated into bad data because it is getting garbled in the system. So I think there is some work to be done there, yes.
Here, behind that a little bit, we've been going down this path of trying to build a machine that runs faster, more standardized, more automated, because that's where we believe the efficiencies are. There's no off-ramp. It's just more, more, more. It doesn't serve the purpose. It frustrates the candidates. It frustrates the recruiters. It doesn't yield a lot of great candidates at the end of the day. It feels like if we keep going on that path, we're probably not going to get to a better spot. So what I hear you saying is the answer is slow down, do less, be more intentional, start with the shaping of the job description, make the technology more attentive and adaptable, and create a better user experience. What else do we need to fix in the recruiting process to deliver a more human experience?
So I have a client that I've been working with who applied for an executive level role, was a finalist, got a verbal offer, and then a week later, that verbal offer was pulled back. They offered consulting instead. A week after that, the consulting opportunity was pulled back. When this client asked, what's happening? What's going on? The answer was the CEO changed their mind. They don't see the value in the role. So it is an overused word, but one of the things that needs to happen is alignment between the HR executive and the business executive. So between the CEO and the CHRO, because that lack of alignment leads to a situation like that. And that's not a technology problem. That's a conversation problem. To get so far as to approve an executive level role and then pull it back, that's insanity. It doesn't make any sense. And it does erode the company's employer value proposition. It does erode the employer's reputation in the marketplace. It does make people question their stance towards candidates, their stance towards employee engagement, their stance towards employee experience. And that's not healthy for them. It's certainly not healthy for a candidate. My client was very upset, as you can imagine.
If you were to give the decision makers, the people that have authority over budgets, over hiring, some advice, what would you tell them?
At the end of the day, organizations are collections of individuals. And technology is an enabler and an empowerer. It is not a replacement for the true value of a human being who can reason, who can relate, who can respond and react. It is important to ask, where can this business leverage AI? It is also important to remember that the business is rooted in humans. And that at the end of the day, my AI only works as well as the prompts that I give it. So it's relying on a human being, even though it's AI, machine learning. It is about what is the prompt the human is feeding to the machine that generates either positive or not so positive outcomes. So I think we forget that. We think that AI is autonomous, but it's not. It's actually human dependent, ironically. So we want humans who think well, critically, with complexity, and with rigor, so that they can, in an AI world, leverage AI in strategic and constructive ways.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I find it actually kind of ironic. I mean, there's this whole movement towards autonomous machines, self-driving vehicles, agent goes out there, books your travel, right, spends your money. And we spend very little time thinking about human autonomy and kind of enabling people to actually be accountable for something because they have the decision-making authority. We're very glad to give that to machines, although we don't know where we might end up as we do that, but we're very hesitant to do that with human beings. I really like that message. If you were to make a prediction about the future, where do you think we're going to end up?
I'm going to go back to our talent acquisition example for a minute. And I think that we're going to see so much tension in this system and so much pressure that it is going to implode and that we will have to remake it. And I know that sounds big and it sounds catastrophic and it sounds sensationalist, but I also don't think what's happening is sustainable. I don't think that over the long run, it's going to yield the kind of quality and the kind of results that organizations need in order to thrive. I think we're going to go forward really, really fast, and then we're going to have to come back a little bit.
The recruiting example is interesting. It used to be, you and I talked about this, people put an ad in the paper, three lines, and then folks that thought that this was a job for them would write on nice paper, send in their CV, and then an HR person would review that, and you would interview two or three people, and you would make a decision. That was the talent pool you had, the people who applied. And nowadays, you put an ad out, you get 2,000, 10,000, maybe in a year you get 100,000 resumes because people get smart about using this technology. So it becomes virtually impossible to find that needle in the haystack. So the efficiency is there in terms of processing this, but the actual output goes way down. So I can definitely see that at some point people say, this doesn't work anymore. We got to fundamentally revamp the system. We also don't realize that once we have people, yes, we might hire them for a task or a set of tasks, but that oftentimes is just a starting point. At the end of the day, people presumably develop on the job, take on more responsibility, can do more as they know the organization. It also feels that there's very little thought put into that part. So once we have them on board, how do we create a work experience that actually develops the person?
You make me laugh remembering back to the days of beautiful cardstock paper and resumes, and you walked it to the mailbox and you sent it in. And one of the things that happened then as well was that a candidate would have an interview. Now candidates are having 5, 6, 12, 15 interviews to not get a role. And I wonder if this is a non-virtuous cycle. If the reason that there's such a high volume of interviews for senior positions comes back to this question of we're not screening well. Not only are we not screening well, we're not onboarding well once the person lands. And by well, I mean grounded in the business, helping an individual understand what's my role here? Where did I just land? What is this company all about? How do I succeed here? How does work actually get done here? How are decisions made? How is communication conducted? Do I use Teams? Do I use email? Do I call someone? What do I do? Right? There's all these questions that go unanswered because we are trying to automate onboarding and push it out through the LMS. And to your point, that just continues along the employee life cycle at every stage of transition, that there isn't enough support surrounding individuals to grow and develop in role and or progress to the next. And, you know, that is really an age-old challenge that we've had, and it's getting harder in this age where people are, you know, ducking and covering from the next riff.
Yeah. I also find it just fascinating, right? We're going down this path of using these systems, using automation. But if you look at the senior folks in an organization, a new CEO comes in or a new head of blah, blah, blah. And very quickly, they start to pull in the people that they worked with in the past, right? So actually, they don't use the same process that the general population has to go through. It's a completely different process.
Absolutely right.
And the experience of those senior folks that get brought in because we know them, we trust them, we know that, right, they can help us execute, is a very different experience than everybody else in the organization. I find it amazing that these two completely different experiences exist side by side in the same organization.
Well, and I think this is such an important point, Thomas, because I'm not a career coach, but the career coaches that I work with will tell their clients the number one thing you need to do is network. That is not true if you're just in middle management. That is not the way that people are getting jobs. At the senior levels, yes, it is 100%. It's networking, it's connecting, it's people that you know, it's the power of the relationship. At the more junior levels, it's this onslaught of applications and interviews that we were talking about before. So I think you're right. There's almost a caste system. There's like a dual level, maybe even tri-level for frontline manager and then executive leadership where the processes are different. And the blanket advice from career coaches of you just have to network, that's where your next job is going to come from, is unfair unless you're at that senior level.
But it also makes me think that maybe it's also part of the answer, because clearly there's a reason why at the top of the organization, we follow that approach. So it's either you tap into your own personal network or you hire an executive recruiter who has access to those circles. They don't do a LinkedIn resume search for the most part. They dig a little bit deeper. And so I wonder if maybe the future is more scaling that experience across the organization. So maybe managers start to source their own talent and don't rely on HR anymore to find the candidates, maybe to vet the candidates, maybe to put them on the payroll system. But maybe it goes down the path that at least for experienced professionals, managers need to nurture their own networks. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yes, business-driven talent pools, I think, are an amazing idea because the closer you are to the business, the more attuned the job is going to be to what actually needs to happen. And I think this is the translation process that gets broken between hiring manager and recruiter that needs to be addressed. Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Awesome. Listen, this was a super insightful conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise. If people want to learn more about your work, what you do, how you might be able to help them, where should they go?
They should go to my LinkedIn profile at Gabriella D. Salvatore, and I would love to connect with anyone who's interested.
And we'll put that into the show notes to make it easy for people to reach out to you. It was a pleasure to have you on. We had numerous conversations over the last couple of months, and I enjoyed every single one of them. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
It is my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.